We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
You are listening to KC Sports Network, proudly presented by Emprise Bank. Coming up, the latest episode of 21 Questions.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to another edition of 21 Questions, the question and answer show brought to you by the KCSN Discord. I am Craig Stout, and I am here with not only a special guest, but exclusive breaking news. Matt Verderam has joined KCSN. He's going to be doing a podcast with Tucker D. Franklin called That Football Show. Matt, my friend, we have worked together for a very long time. It is great to have you join KCSN, buddy.
I'm happy to be here. This is great. I feel like it's a little bit of a coming home thing because I've worked with so many people who are at KCSN when we were all elsewhere and in other places. I'm pretty sure, in fact, like almost everyone at one point or another, not Briscoe, but I went on Briscoe's radio show for, sure, for years on end. Yeah, man, it's good. I'm looking forward to it. You guys do amazing work. I watch the lab all the time. Yeah, Swanson, sometimes I'm in and out because he gets a little feisty.
But that's how you know that Matt watches the lab right there. That's how
when you start screaming LaVon, I'm like, all right, like we gotta calm down a little bit. I'm usually watching at like 1 o'clock in the morning when I'm trying to
wake your kids up, man.
Yes. So, but that being said, no, I'm pumped up. I'm looking forward to working with Tuck. That'll be a lot of fun. Well, it's a national show with the Chiefs slant to it, so it's a little bit different. But with my role over at SI covering the whole league, figure that might make the most sense.
Absolutely, it does. Yeah, we all have worked together for long enough at that original place that we all started under monikers. We didn't know each other's names yet. At that point, we were all writing under pseudonyms at that point, or, you know, yeah. What? So, yeah.
So yours is what? Kalo Phoenix.
Right? Kalo Phoenix.
That's right. No, I was Flowers 24, which tells you how long ago that was.
Yeah.
And then I appreciate the one bit I get that I love the most is a Seth, who was MN Chiefs fan and then briefly went to Seth Kaiser. And I was like, no, I'm just going to stick with MN
Chiefs. That doesn't play your right. Yeah.
He's like, the only person, he's like, all right, no, I'm just going to stay with the name. But yeah, no, I mean, hell, BJ was there. Got Matt Connor was there. Patrick Allen was there, who I worked with for very, very many years over at Fansided. I mean, it's been quite a ride, honestly. Yeah. I mean, it's crazy. I feel like an old man now. That was like a decade ago.
At least. I mean, like, I think I started writing there around 2009.
That's not when I started. Yeah, at the end of my college career.
Yeah, it's been a little while. So, yeah.
Without writing fan posts there.
I know.
Like, just complaining about Herm and Carl Peterson. And then they were like, hey, listen, you want to write on the front page for like $100 a month? Like, it sounds great.
Sounds great. But let's do it.
Your money. Yes, it was great.
Mine was Clancy Pendergast came over, and everybody wanted to know how they were going to transition to the 3-4. So I started writing about defense for the site.
God, about him. Clancy. Clancy. Good. they had, man, those are some men. Anybody who says, you know, Chiefs fans don't deserve Mahomes, go back,
buddy,
watch those years.
I have said multiple times over the past, you know, 3-4 years, I've said, man, I covered this team in 2012. You can't tell me anything. Like, you just can't tell me anything. That was a beyond brutal year on so many different levels. And so, yeah. Anybody that was around watching at that time as a super fan or covering it or whatever, you've earned the past Patrick Mahomes years.
I'll leave the reminiscing with this. I remember when I was in college, I was fortunate enough that ESPN brought on a few of myself and a few buddies. It's like local utilities when they would bring Monday Night Football to Buffalo or New England, because I went to school in that area. Mm-hmm. And one of the games was Kansas City at New England, and it was Tyler Palko against Tom Brady. And I'm on the sideline for this game, okay? And Tyler Palko, somebody could go look at the stats. He was brutal, as he normally was. They got killed. They got beat like
24-3
or something. And I remember my father was just texting me throughout the game, also a diehard Chiefs fan. He's like, they've got to have somebody better than this guy. Anyone alive has to be better than this guy. You would think. Here we are. Here we are. I mean, in any event, if somebody needs to at some point make a 30 for 30, like the Tyler Palko experience, and then just like morph it into what Mahomes is now, there's never been a bigger disparity in any team's history.
I think you're right. Like, I really think you're, like, we were pining for Ricky Stanzi. Like, that's how much we were down, you know, at that point. At least during the Tyler Thigpen years, the offense was fun. Like, yes. Wasn't good, but it was fun. So, I don't know, man. I don't know. Anyway, we go way back.
Yeah.
But we are here to answer your present day questions about largely the Kansas City Chiefs. A couple of things that are in here, but we'll get it started here. Grayson Jaspers asked, will Hollywood be on the Chiefs roster in 2025? Matt, what's your gut feeling on that?
I would say no, because I think this is one of these things where it's almost mutually beneficial. If, hey, Hollywood, listen, you go get paid elsewhere because you're great this year. Mm-hmm. I look at the one-year deal in a few ways. And the number one, look, he gets to reset his value. And if he has a great year in Kansas City, then he gets to hit the market and the cap will just keep going up and he can make more money, and that works for him. Mm-hmm. But it also works for Brett Veach in this regard. If they go out and they draft a receiver early, first round, second round, and that guy, let's say that he is another hit. He's similar to Rashee Rice's trajectory. That guy's not blocked by Hollywood Brown now. They can just be like, hey, you learned for a year as like the third receiver, maybe even the fourth early behind a Justin Watson, somebody like that. Mm-hmm. And then, hey, Justin Watson's contract's up after this year, and Hollywood Brown's up after this year. And then the Chiefs can either say, hey, we can try to bring Hollywood back, or we've got the leverage to just go, you know, we got two really good young receivers, and we still have Kelsey for another year, and we have Noah Gray. And so I would say no, but I also think it depends. Like, I think it depends on his production this year. If he plays great, he probably prices himself out.
Yeah, I'm with you. And you know, I know Chiefs fans are largely waiting for the other shoe to fall with maybe another wide receiver addition, which I'd love another vet in the room. Don't get me wrong. But if you add another vet in the room and you are currently liking, Brett Veach largely knows how the draft is going to shake out at this point. Combine has happened. They know generally who's going to be around pick 32, around pick 64. If they got to trade up for somebody, they know that information. Generally, there'll be some surprises, but generally they know if they are targeting a wide receiver early, they don't want to block that guy too much.
Right.
You bring in another veteran. Now, all of a sudden, he might be fifth on the, you know, in the pecking order there. And now he's playing more special teams. He's not getting some of the offensive reps in the same way. So if you truly want to target an early guy and you're looking for the future, I love that comment, Matt. If you're looking for the future and you're drafting the guy, even in round one, if he hits, you got a round one wide receiver that's really good. Rashee Rice, who's good and could, you know, progress to really good this season. And now all of a sudden, you don't feel so bad about the wide receiving core, and you can do another one of these one-year deals for a wide receiver three. And now you're not having to target top of the market type deals. Hollywood Brown is vastly underpaid right now. I mean, Jerry Jeudy's contract came down today, Matt, when we're recording this. And
that
Yikes.
That is an aggressive amount of money. Jerry Jeudy. Jerry Jeudy was a rumor in the games largely that he played this year against Kansas City, where Jarius Sneed basically swallowed him whole. The other thing too is, like, if you're gonna go vet and like, I honestly think they're better off at this point, like, leaving the market alone and just going to get a receiver, because the receiver class is loaded in the draft.
It is.
Might be 10 guys going to the top two rounds. But the one guy who's actually intriguing to me, and I don't know how you feel about this, is Tyler Boyd. Like, Tyler Boyd, you can just mark him down for like 700-800 yards.
Yeah.
But now the only problem is he plays pretty much primarily in the slot.
Correct.
And so does that block some?
You've got a lot of slot guys now.
That's the only question, because like, they like to use Rice all over, but like, mm-hmm. Rice played some in the slot. So it's like, do you block him a little bit with that? But Boyd is a guy. Like, I thought if they didn't get Hollywood Brown, maybe they would just say, look, Rice is going to move out and be like the X receiver, and we can play Boyd inside, you know, so on and so forth.
Yeah. No, I would like a Tyler Boyd in theory. I just think that there's a lot of same.
Yeah.
Now, all of a sudden, that occurs there. You know, again, no, I'm with you. If they didn't have Hollywood Brown, I'd be hard pivoting to Tyler Boyd right now. Hey, let's go. Let's go make that move. But I also think, to that point, it limits some of what they might be looking for in the draft, because I think they want to get that X now. I think they're going to try and really push for that X. Maybe that means that they take a little bit of a swing on a guy that's more of a project that can play X. Keon Coleman, for example, you know, who might be there at 32. Not my favorite prospect, but a guy that I would understand given the Chiefs' current wide receiver room. It's like, hey, you need to find that X. He's a freak athlete. He can go out there and do all the stuff that your ex-wide receiver might need. He's just going to need a year. And if that's the case, sure. You know, lining up Hollywood Brown and saying, hey, you could be gone in 2025. We feel good about where we are as a receiver room after that, makes all the sense in the room. Or they could just trade up for Brian Thomas Jr., and I'm also cool with that.
You know, I was just going to say Brian Thomas. Because, you know, look, everybody knows in the draft, there are going to be one or two of these kids that you're going to be sitting on, like, pick 24, pick 25, going, that guy, he's still available? Like, man, does he slide? I mean, McDuffie was that guy.
Yes.
You know, where the Chiefs were open. Like, the Chiefs who do this for a living were like, damn, really? He's still out there? And then the Bills are like, well, if he gets to us. And then the Chiefs jumped him, and Kyrie Elm went to Buffalo, and the world's never been the same. But, I mean, look, I think if you're Veach, especially if you trade Sneed, and you get a day two pick, you have the capital that if you want to be like, hey, you know what? If we want to get up to like 20, we could do it, or 23. And talking to a lot of people at the Combine and the Senior Bowl, there's a thought that you don't want a lot of picks in the back end of this draft. This draft is really front-loaded, top 100 to 125. And when you think about comp picks, you're really basically talking the top three rounds. And then after that, it falls off a cliff because you have all these kids who are like these COVID kids, so to speak.
Yeah.
Who played 5-6 years in college. And so I think a lot of these teams that, like, the Bills have, I think it's something like 7 or 8 picks on day three. If I'm Brandon Bean, I'm trading up big time.
Package as many of those as possible. Yeah. Like,
I don't want those picks. I don't want 4 picks in the 6th round. Like, so if I'm the Chiefs, I wonder with Veach, who's been aggressive at times, like, does he say, hey, man, We'll package a couple of later round picks and get up? Because I think in this draft, it's probably the way to go.
It probably is the way to go. I do want him to keep one just because I'm curious if he can keep this DB streak going in day three. Like, it seems unsustainable, but every year there's another one. So anyway.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. Next question. I love this one. This is a little abstract. AceFaith4 says, if a fan base were to pull a Nancy Kerrigan on Patrick Mahomes, which fan base is responsible, and how crazy is it that he thinks that a Raiders fan isn't currently in his top three?
Now, I got to admit, my immediate thought was the Raiders.
Yeah,
but I also kind of agree with him, because I feel like Raiders fans at this point are like, listen, can we just not have like Aiden O'Connell as our quarterback?
Right.
Like, let's just worry about our own house.
The bar is low.
I feel like it's got to be Buffalo.
Yeah.
Like Cincinnati can at least sit there and say, hey, you know, we've beaten it. We've been able to do that. Mm-hmm. Baltimore, they've played them once in the playoffs.
Right.
I feel like Buffalo, 3 of the last 4 years have ended because of Mahomes. You know, like whether it's been 9 yards a play in this year's game, or it was the 13 seconds game, or it was that massacre in 2020 where he threw for like 330 yards and 329 of them were to Kelce and Hill. Like, I think it's got to be somebody from Bills Mafia going for a kneecap.
Yeah.
You know, I think they've never won. Like, it's got to be Buffalo.
Desperation's sinking in. Like, they're having to trade. They're having to basically dismantle their team right now.
Cryptically tweeting every other hour. Yeah.
And it's not. Yeah. It's definitely going. Buffalo's definitely in my top three. Sneakily, Kyle Shanahan might be standing back there with a tire iron right now. Like, he's sick and tired. Patrick Mahomes. Being Patrick Mahomes has cost him two rings now. Now, he's not helped himself, I know, before anybody jumps in. He's not helped himself here, but Patrick Mahomes has been the obstacle here. I think Kyle Shanahan feels like if he could Nancy Kerrigan him, he might have a shot at a ring. So, yeah, he's a sneaky pick there.
But it's funny, like, not to get off topic of the question, but when you think about if – Patrick Mahomes isn't Patrick Mahomes. Kyle Shanahan probably has two rings. And he's probably sitting there going like, yeah, man, he's on pace to be one of the greatest coaches of all time.
The whole narrative changes.
Like, he's in the Hall of Fame already.
Yeah.
And yet now it's like, well, he's a choke artist, which I don't think is totally fair, although I also think it's kind of fair based on like what's happened. I mean, obviously, you know, we haven't really talked too much. But like, the Super Bowl, sitting there watching that game, like that coin toss thing was just irredeemable. I don't care what – all this stuff about, like, well, the analytics say this, man, that is such a load of crap. Like, look, you don't give him the ball saying, hey, Pat, if you score a six, it's over. Like, you know, but in any event, no, listen, I think, but, you know, somebody said this to me once, and it's always stuck with me. Mahomes' greatness can also be measured not only in his own accolades, but the accolades he keeps from others.
Mm-hmm.
And then you think about Lamar, Burrow, to an extent, although Burrow beat him once, Josh Allen specifically. All these guys, you know, the Trevor Lawrences even, like, they can't win.
Yeah.
They can't get by them. So it's like all these quarterbacks. It's like when Jordan was just knocking down Ewing and Reggie Miller and, you know, all these, you know, Alonzo Moore, all these great players. Can't get by them.
And so,
I think the Bills are the leader in the clubhouse to have the rebar on hand.
Totally agree. And to your point, this is not like when Brady was beating Manny, because Manny clipped him a couple of times. Like, it was still happening. Josh Allen can't get past it. It is an obstacle right now. He is the best quarterback that we've seen that has such a clear barrier to success right now. Like, Josh Allen also should have himself a very strong Hall of Fame case at this point in his career, and he can't. Same thing with Kyle Shanahan. He can't right now. He needs to win more. That's always going to be hanging over him. He's Marino right now. It's the gaudy stats. He's gonna win MVPs eventually. You know, it's gonna happen for him. He's that level of player, and yet when he gets to the playoffs, doesn't matter. Like the boogeyman's right over there.
Look at Nick Sirianni. Like, Nick Sirianni.
Oh man,
people are literally like, "Hey man, slow start, you get fired."
Yeah,
I mean, they were inches from winning that Super Bowl. Like, I mean, look, I know, like, Nick Bolton's divisive in Kansas City. Nick Bolton played like God that night.
Oh, my God. He was arguably the only defender that played well in that game for the Chiefs.
Single-handedly, defensively, was like the one reason they were still in that game. And you look back at that game, you're like, man, if Sirianni, if they win that game, like, yeah, all right, the collapse happens and everybody's not thrilled this year at Philly, but you're not sitting there going, well, maybe they should fire him. You know, but
he's got job security.
Right.
At that point.
But now it's like, well, yeah, but he didn't win that game. And then they collapse. So, like, you know, things can change in a hurry. Meanwhile, the Chiefs are trying to, you know, three-peat. So, things change.
I know. Three-peat. That's
crazy.
Wild to come out of this. All right. Derek says, we all love Brett Veach, but it seems that him and the front office have had some situations that seemingly are, quote-unquote, botched, like the Chris Jones situation and now potentially Snead. Chris Jones last year, Snead this year. Where are him and the front office going wrong with these situations, in your opinion?
So, I'm actually going to defend Veach on the Jones thing from this standpoint. That was so horribly handled by Jones's representation all summer long. Like, That was a tire fire. And I remember speaking to like a litany of people in the NFL, not just in Kansas City, like around the league. And people universally were like, I don't know what the hell's happening. Like, I have no idea why he's holding out. Like, it's not going to work out. And it didn't until they won the Super Bowl again. And to Chris's credit, he was incredible in the playoffs. And so then it became like, hey, if you want a three-peat, you got to pay him. Like, they were the rare team this year with the Chiefs that the pressure actually gets ratcheted up because they won. Most of the time, you win a Super Bowl and you can kind of exhale, right? It's like, hey, man, house money. House money.
And you're standing at the parade. Oh, we're going to do it again. And everybody's like, sure you are, guys. Brother, good for you. You know.
Total house money.
Yeah.
And they, the second they won, I mean, hell, watch the mic'd up. The players are like, got to win three. Brett kind of got painted into a corner of like, hey, man, you got to sign him. Like, what are you going to do? No, and truthfully, what ended up really biting them was the guaranteed money because they would not have been anywhere near 95, and then they had to give him the 95. But, like, to me, the contract's really 3 years and $95 million. Like, the other 2 years, whatever, they can eat it. It makes no difference. But to me, the one that's interesting with Veach is, like, going forward here, I think it would be botched this offseason if they don't try to extend a few of these guys who are coming up after next year. And I'm talking specifically about Humphrey and Bolton.
Yeah. Like, those are the two. Yeah.
Like, I don't care what anybody thinks about Bolton. All you have to do is listen to Steve Spagnuolo talk about Nick Bolton.
Buddy, they're signing him to a near top of the market contract.
Nick Bolton's about to get paid like Mahomes. Okay. Yeah. Like, okay, Nick Bolton's going to move into that neighborhood. And Humphrey, you got to pay him. Like, Humphrey is, a top two, three center in football, and he's in his early 20s. You know, Trey Smith, listen, we get out of that conversation, and we'll see what happens.
The guard market's insane. They can't afford to pay.
They're not paying Trey Smith $15 million a year. No. That's not going to happen.
No.
So, but Humphrey and Bolton, and, like, I even think Justin Reed, like, you got – that's where, if I'm Brett Veach, I will criticize if they don't get ahead of that. The Snead thing, I don't – look, I've done a lot of reporting on this in the last week with fellow KCSN member Nate Taylor, who's, of course, all over the Chiefs. And my understanding with the Snead thing is, look, like, they have had a ton of interest. The problem is Jarius Snead's asking for $22-plus million a year.
Yeah.
That's not a Veach problem. That's a Jarius Snead problem.
Yeah.
I mean, I have not heard one person in the league that I've spoke to about this who's like, yeah, I would give him $22 million. It's hard. He's 27. He had knee issues this past year. Even though he played, to his credit, he played through a lot of knee issues. Like,
a lot.
That's hard, man. Like,
it is.
You know, so I don't know that I can fault Veach for that, but I will fault them if they're not proactive with some of these guys this offseason that are eligible for free agency next year.
And I do think that one of those is tied to the other. I think after they trade Snead, they got a little cap space to do some of these deals, to make some of these things happen. Those seem like July moves to me, and that's great. You know, hey, you know, make those happen when that happens. But it definitely seemed, you know, originally when we were looking at this Legarius Snead thing, there was that whole, you know, will they, won't they, what sort of value are the Chiefs going to get that they're not okay with getting? And it sounds like that's not the problem, that's not the holdup at all. Like, they're on board. They're ready to trade Legarius Snead as soon as a contract is agreed to, from everything that's being reported by guys like you, Nate Taylor, you know, other individuals. It seems like that is the hang up right now. And yes, that's not a Veach thing. Like, you can't force a player to take less somewhere else. You can't force a player to agree to that contract. The best you can do is move on from that player eventually. Now, they have restructured Mahomes enough. They can keep Snead on this. They can keep him on the tag.
They're
willing to. And hey, you want a three-peat? There you go. You know, he with, you know, Trent McDuffie makes a massive difference for this defense. So I think they're fine with it. But I wouldn't expect that we're going to see them tag Legarius Snead again next year. This would be it.
My understanding is they're not extending him. Like, this would be it. And so if you're the Chiefs, here's the thing, though. Like, and I look, the compensatory pick argument is kind of fool's gold in some ways, but
it is.
Because people just think, like, if a guy leaves, you get a third round pick, which is not
you don't. Okay? You don't.
But if you're the Chiefs and you get offered a mid to late third round pick for him, I would just keep him on the tag at that point. Now,
I would too.
At that juncture, I'd be like, look, maybe I don't even get a third round compensatory. Maybe I get a fourth or something. But okay, fine. That's worth the extra year. Now, Then you could argue, hey, listen, if some team offers him a big contract and you don't want to get in the guy's way, that's cool. Like that's good business, and that's
fine. Tyreek Hill. The Tyreek Hill trade's a prime example.
Yes. I get them saying that. But I got to be fair. One thing I'll say for Brett, a lot of times when people have been like, well, how could they let that guy go? That guy's gone, and it's been like, eh, does it really matter? I mean, they lost Hill, Ward, and Tyrann Mathieu in an offseason and won the Super Bowl and then won it again.
Yeah.
Like they let Juju walk, and everybody was kind of like, man, I don't want to pay them. And look, nothing against Juju. He was hurt, and he was bad last year. Now, he's also on a team with you and me at quarterback.
I know.
But like, you know, that doesn't help. But, you know, he usually makes the right moves, man. I mean,
he does.
Jewelry on his fingers show that.
And of those guys, not that Tyron's been bad, and obviously Tyreek's been great still. Yeah.
And Ward,
Charvarius Ward was an all pro, but like Orlando Brown Jr., I mean, he was fine there. Of those guys that have kind of dwelled around, I keep pointing to Emmanuel Ogba as the guy that I'm like, man, I would have offered that contract. Like, that's the one that I would have been like, yeah, the Chiefs should have done that. The rest of those guys either got a whole bunch of money somewhere else or were on the decline. And so he's been right on a lot of those moves. And, you know, if they're moving on from L'Jarius Sneed, if they don't trust that knee, if it's something like that, chances are good. History will tell you that they're probably right in that regard. So we're going to take a quick break. We'll be right back with more of your questions.
We appreciate you supporting KC Sports Network by listening to our podcast. You have helped us become the highest-ranked Chiefs podcast network in 2022 and 2023. And don't forget about our daily Substack newsletter, the best written analysis you can find on the Chiefs straight to your inbox every day. KCSN.substack.com.
Philip has just lost the respect of the youth league football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have The Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get The Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
We are back with Matt Verderam, newest KCSN podcaster. We're so happy to have him. Make sure that you are tuning in for his show with Tucker Franklin, That Football Show. It's going to be a great addition to the KCSN lineup. Tank the Frank, and I love this because right now, Matt, in the KCSN Discord, we have our member mock going. Everybody has selected their teams, and we have a full mock offseason. We do trades, we do free agency, we do the draft, we do all of this stuff. And so right now everybody's chosen their team. So everybody's got like Frank, Tank the Frank is the Pats GM right now. So he's in charge of you and I at quarterback. So, you know, good luck to him. But he says, who would you choose to be QE2 for this year?
Man, You know, man, like this has been the question du jour, I feel like, in every NFL event I've been at, and everybody has a different opinion. I would say that I would take Drake May. That's just me. And the reason I would do that is when you talk to people, the one concern, like Daniels is a freak athletically. Mm-hmm. And I don't think anybody would argue that. Like he can do things that Drake May can't do. The concern I have is when you look at some of the like the statistics, when he starts to scramble, he doesn't throw the ball. He takes off. And like in the NFL, that's a problem. Mm-hmm. Like you've now maybe he can learn that. Maybe that gets coached out of him. I just all year, and really even since last year, it's been like, man, Williams and May, and now all of a sudden it's like, I don't know about Drake May. And you're like, really? Because what changed?
What did he do different?
He stopped playing and then everybody's opinion changed, doesn't it?
Yeah.
What the hell happened? Now, like Bo Nix, Michael Penix Jr., I saw those guys live and in color at the Senior Bowl. And I got to tell you, it wasn't great.
Yeah.
It wasn't great. Bo Nix was having a hard time hitting a guy 7 yards downfield. So that it was Penix like got better as the week went on, and Bo Nix just didn't. Now, that being said, look, one of those guys is going to be an Hall of Famer. But I at least get some of the cooling off with those guys because you saw that. And you're like, well, it brings up questions. Drake May's done nothing.
No.
So, like, I would take May, but I'm not going to kill Washington if they take Daniels. So I think it's a fair conversation to have.
And see, J.J. McCarthy's name in there as well. I personally have it more of a toss-up between Daniels and McCarthy than between Daniels and May. Like, I wouldn't fault Chicago if they came out and they said, hey, you know, I understand what Caleb Williams is. We want maybe a little higher floor with Drake May and taking him in front of Caleb Williams. That's not going to happen, to be clear. I want everybody to know that I'm not saying that Caleb Williams is a Chicago Bear, but Drake May is that level of player. I think because Caleb is such a terrific prospect and the Bear, it is a slam dunk number one pick for them that people forget how good May really is. He has been nothing but good since he's been in college, and I see a lot of helmet scouting. I see a lot of stuff like that. It's like, oh, those North Carolina quarterbacks. It's like, man, he ain't them. Like, it's not close.
And that's such a terrible way.
It is.
To do this. Like, it's like, it, you know, there was stuff like that when Mahomes came out. It's like, well, you know, Texas Tech.
King never had it.
You know, like, yeah, okay. How's that going?
Grant Morrell. You know.
Yeah, it's like, it doesn't matter. I don't, you know, everybody's unto themselves. But, yeah, I just think sometimes, you know, the draft season is so long. You know, because for a lot of teams, let's face it, draft season starts like Halloween, okay? Yeah. And then you just keep rolling, and then and just for about everybody, you know, it really gets into full gear in January. And you just have so much time to, like, ruminate on these takes. Like, I saw a take there. I'm not even going to say who it was because it's whatever. I'm not going to. But, like, they're like, Marvin Harrison Jr., like, my third receiver. I'm like, really, man?
Yeah.
Do you watch college football? They're going to tell you.
That is a peak March take right
there. He's pretty good, man. Like, he's a number one receiver. Like, I love Malik Nabers, and I love Rome Odunze, but come on, love man. Him. That's the same level of, like, I'll tell you, I'd take Burrow over Mahomes. No, you wouldn't.
No, you wouldn't.
No, you. My rule of thumb on this is always the same. If your life depended on it, who are you taking? And all these people would all, Mahomes. Yeah, no kidding. Of course you take Mahomes. Who the hell's lining up? Go, Purdy. Give me Purdy. Like, no, well,
and, and think of it this way. You're saying if your life depended on it, a lot of these general managers' livelihood depends on this shit. Like, it's not one of those where they're like, I got a top five pick. Let me throw it out there. Oh, man, we messed it up. There are ramifications for that. You feel that. So, yeah.
That's why, like, all this stuff with now, obviously, now it's all in stone anyway because Fields got traded, but all this stuff, like, based out here near Chicago, the constant conversation for 2 months was, you know, maybe they should keep Fields and maybe they should trade this pick. Look, man, all you guys do is complain about the fact he didn't take Mahomes. If you don't take this kid and he goes on to be a top three quarterback for the next 15 years, like, everybody involved is fired. Everybody.
Yes.
And you go, look, you take the kid. And you know what? If he turns out to be a bust, then you can sit there and say, hey, we did what we were supposed to do in the moment, and it didn't work out. Fine. You can live with that. But if you try to get cute and go, nah, you know what? We're going to pass on the generational kid because we're thinking Joe Alt, number one overall. Like, no. Like, look, Joe Alt, John Alt's son, might be awesome.
Yeah.
But, like, you take Caleb Williams. That's what you do. And so, yeah, I just am a big believer in, like, you take the guy you're supposed to take and then let history take its course.
And you know who doesn't have to fall on the sword if Caleb Williams doesn't progress immediately? Ryan Poles, the guy who's making the pick.
He is going to fault you for that.
No. They'll be like, wow, that coaching staff really didn't work out. It didn't really vibe with Caleb. They're not laying that at the feet of Ryan Poles this year. So, yeah, you're taking the guy that is going to give you a longer runway, and if he hits, guess what? You are GM in Chicago until you are ready to be done. Like, it's
Veach is Veach. Look, that he actually didn't draft Mahomes secondly. Dorsey did. But, like, Veach is riding this into a gold jacket in Canton and then and then a Corona on the beach. Like that. Like, Veach, if Veach wants to, he can co-announce his retirement with Mahomes and be like, all right, then. Somebody else's problem to figure out the succession.
Yeah, exactly. I don't want to deal with life after this, man. No. The expectations are ridiculous. I'm out.
Yeah. I'm good. Like, and then people can always sit there and have that question. Like, Belichick should have just rode out with Brady.
Yeah.
Because then you can never have that whole, like, well, you know, was it Brady? Was it Belichick? Oh, never. No. Because we went out together, you know, but it is what it is. I think the number two pick, though, is fast.
Yeah, I do as well. I do think it's May at this point in time right now. So, Positive Toasty says, which players in either free agency or the draft would you most like to see fill out the Chiefs running back room?
Well, I was initially all aboard the Austin Ekeler trade.
Yeah.
I thought, man, like, that's just, he's Kimball Anders in 2024. Right? We're just swing it out to him and he's going to catch 90 passes. You know what? The market was pretty hot for running backs.
Really?
Sure it was,
man.
Like, shockingly so. I still think there are some guys out there that could make some sense. I'll give you a name, and, like, I wouldn't give up anything more than a late round pick because of the positional value, but I just think it'd be fascinating, is Tyler Allgeier out of Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
Behind Bijan Robinson, man, I'd call them a big sixth rounder. We'll give you a sixth round pick.
Yeah.
That guy is good. Like, now you got to trade for him, but
sure.
The problem is, in this draft, man, the running back class is not great.
It's not.
It is not. Like, it's not even one of those classes where you're like, there's two or three guys, and then it's like, you look at it, and you're like, eh.
Like, Jonathan Brooks might be the first guy off the board, and that's going to be maybe late, too? I mean,
you might get in the third round if we have a running back.
Also. Yeah.
Like, so, I'll be honest, there's nobody in the draft that I look at personally, and I'm like, man, I'd love the Chiefs to go get this guy. Now, if I sat there and looked at 40 running backs, maybe I could find one or two, but I think SI would fire me if I spent my time doing that. I would say this, though. I wonder if there's a world here where the Chiefs even retain one of the two guys that are leaving right now.
Yeah.
And I'm not, like, overly enthused about that, but do you just say, hey, like, Jerick, you got another year in you? I feel like that ship's kind of sailed. You needed him last year because he can block.
Correct.
But now Pacheco can block.
Right.
So I don't know. Like, it almost feels like if anybody would be CEH, which, again, not overly enthused about
that. Yeah. Like, the room is fine the same way that it's been fine. You know, you're not jazzed about it. Like, it's not what something that you can be like, oh, if Pacheco goes down, we still feel good about the depth behind it. No, you're like, that's not good.
Bring up, like, Prince, man, and be like, and then draft the late round guy.
Yeah,
you know, do something like that. I would call Atlanta and be like, hey, six for Allgeier. What do you think?
Right, absolutely.
You know, and fine.
Well, especially if you are looking at some of that positional value there at the end of the draft, you know, a couple of guys that, you know, we went to the Shrine Game, a couple of guys that we like there, Blake Watson out of Memphis, played at Old Dominion as well, you know, 6'2", 220, you know, rushed for over 1,100 yards in Memphis last year, but the part that I really like about him, he caught 53 passes for 480 yards. Like, that's not a small amount. Like, he's comfortable in a pass-heavy offense. He's comfortable catching balls out of the backfield. If we're looking for a more traditional runner, a guy like Carson Steele out of UCLA is a guy that I really liked the way that he ran. I think that he's a guy that just does a lot of the little things right, but not a particularly great athlete by any means. He's a UDFA. You just bring him into camp and see if he can go win a job there. Those are the types of guys that I'm looking at. But again, to your point, way late in the draft, if you even draft one at all, I just don't think they're going to prioritize it in the same way because of what you said. They can just turn around and call Clyde and say, hey, you still here? Come hang out.
You want $1.5 million for a year? I mean, I mean, he knows the offense. Like, he's fine. The only guy I'd give you just as a name that I think is interesting, and again, a late round deal, if at all, but like Blake Corum out of Michigan.
Yeah.
Like, just a guy. Look, he's
doing the little things right. Yeah.
200 pounds. Like, he's going to fall forward.
Mm-hmm.
And, if they need him to carry the ball 20 times for 2 weeks because Pacheco's got an injured, ankle or something, like,
right.
Fine. You know, he was highly productive at Michigan. Like, he's the kind of guy I feel like could just come in and be like a pro. Like, he's not going to be dominant, but you could just be like, okay, hey, look, man, you're not going to screw this.
He's going to, you know, yeah, exactly.
All you need out of that position, don't F it up, man.
Yeah.
That's it. Don't miss a block. Don't fumble. Like, that's all I need out of you. And if you do that, like, we're good. So right. that's, I mean, I know it's maybe not a great answer, but that's how I look at it.
No, that's, and that's how I hope they look at it as well. Don't prioritize that as a big thing right now, especially since you are improving your wide receiver room to the point where hopefully Isaiah Pacheco is going to see lighter boxes. That's going to make him a more productive back as well. So, you know, a lot of cascading effects from Hollywood Brown coming from that. Adam L. says, if no defensive end is added in free agency, what are some mid/late round Spagsy guys to keep an eye on? Do you have anybody that jumps out to you? Because I got one that I can lead off with while you're thinking.
You lead off because you're more of the draft guy than I am. You fire me.
Miles Cole from Texas Tech is probably, you know, I'm not sure exactly where he's going to go. I got like a 4th round grade on him. He's got terrific athleticism. You know, Tyree Wilson came out of the draft last year.
Yep.
And you were watching him, you know, Miles Cole, opposite of Tyree Wilson. And there were times where you had to pay extra close attention to the number on their backs because they are built so similarly. This guy is huge. He's 6'6", 278 with 36 7/8 inch arms. Now, he's got vines. That is Spags. Like, that alone is Spags. But he's also got some terrific burst. He really tested well. And that explosion doesn't show up. Like, it just doesn't show up right now. He's a raw guy. I know he's like year 6 or something like that at Texas Tech. So he's an older prospect too, but hasn't been able to put it together yet. That's a good gamble. Like, that's a round 4 gamble. You know, the Chiefs took a guy like Joshua Kando. I am more excited about taking Miles Cole in round 4 than I would have been with them taking Joshua Kando, because there's a little bit more athleticism there, and then he's just got the ability to move also all over that line depending on sub packages and stuff like that. I think he makes sense in the Chiefs' defensive line rotation.
So I'll give you a guy that, and actually I'll give you 2 guys. Both of them were at the Senior Bowl, and guys I was watching, I'm like, okay, I can kind of see that. Michael Hall Jr. out of Ohio State is a guy that you got to like he did not have a ton of production with the Buckeyes.
No.
But when you watch that kid on the field, like, there are certain things he can do at 290 pounds. Like, that guy is an issue. Like, you're going to, like, if he could figure out how to use his hands consistently in the right way, and he could get leverage right. I mean, that guy, like, there are certain guys, you just watch him, and the explosiveness off the ball is just different. That he is just a bull off the football. And I think you could use him in a 4-3 defense. You could even put him outside on some downs. You could put him inside. Like, he fits what they like to do. Mm-hmm. And athletically, he's kind of a freak. The question is he one of those guys who's a freak who just never translates?
Right.
Right? Like, that's the question. The other guy who's more of a, he might even be more of a fringe first rounder, so I don't know if he falls in those middle rounds, but Adisa Isaac out of Penn State.
Yeah.
Like, I think he goes
this Penn State kid every year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He probably goes like early 2nd or something.
Yeah.
Like, maybe even goes around 32. But that, like, if he somehow was one of these guys that there's 2 or 3 of them every year, you're like, yeah, the Chiefs are picking, you know, 64th. And we thought these 3 guys were going to go in the first round.
He's still doing here.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, like, when they took Juan Thornhill and everybody was like, I thought he was going 30th. Like, that guy. Like, he's the kind of guy in the 2nd round. If he fell, I'd be, I'll take that guy, you know, and see what he can do. Now, he's not as athletically twitchy as Hall's. Hall's the kind of guy, I think, like, you know, you give him to Joe Cullen and Spags and say, all right, man, do what you do.
Yeah.
Michael Hall, really, he fascinates me. I think he could be a very good player if he gets in the right system with the right coaches.
I do think, and I realize, again, I just mentioned Joshua Kando, didn't really work out for the Chiefs, for Spags, you know, but Joe Cullen being here has given me so much faith in their ability to just turn around and be like, and that guy, you know, Felix Anadike-Uzomah didn't play last year, right? He did, but he didn't really play this past year. And yet, I'm sitting here going, man, Joe Cullen's going to have a great offseason with him. And I'm not going to be surprised at all if Felix comes in and looks awesome week one, you know, has really taken that step. I just have so much implicit faith in Joe Cullen's ability to maximize these guys. I was just over the moon when I heard that he got a contract extension with the Chiefs.
Yep.
He has been such a key component of the last 2 years, George Karloftis' development, Chris Jones's continued rise into what he is here. Just, any of these guys that Matt and I have mentioned here, just throw them to Joe Cullen, and I'm like, yeah, he might turn that guy into a stud. Yeah, I feel good about it.
Right.
So.
By the way, nothing to do with the defensive side of the ball, but when I think about athletic guys in this draft, and I'm like, man, if the Chiefs get their hands on this guy, I just would be fascinated to see how it plays out. Is that kid that tackled Mims out of Georgia?
Buddy.
Dude, that kid, like, he's played like 8 games or something at the collegiate level. Like, he's barely played football. When you watch Amarius Mims, it is staggering how good he is on certain reps. You're like, if this kid can translate, and they've done that before, they'll take a guy who didn't play that much. Willie Gay barely played in college.
Yeah.
And they took Willie Gay in the second round. They're like, all right, we're taking him because he's a freak show.
Yep.
And it worked out. Like, I wonder if he's sitting there at 32.
I'm doing backflips.
You're like,
yeah.
Turning the card, baby.
I'm doing backflips. I'll even walk up there and I'll be like, I realize that this man has played like 3 total games. He's played more than that. But, you know, he's barely played
at the collegiate
level because he's hurt all the time. You know, I realize what the negatives are of this. I don't care. Give me that kid. I want him to be under Andy Heck's tutelage. I want him to learn from this organization because he does have the highest ceiling of any tackle in a stacked tackle class.
It's outrageous.
It's outrageous. So, but because he's hurt all the time and he doesn't play, he might.
Which is a problem. That is.
It is. It absolutely is. All right. Laytoni44 asks, do you have any pre-draft traditions that you do leading up to the big day?
You know, man, I don't because I'm always working.
Yeah.
So my pre-draft tradition is trying to have a life before the draft starts because the next 3 days I am owned by the football gods. No, I don't. I mean, like during game days, I usually like if the Chiefs play early, I usually don't eat before the game. Because I'm so nervous for the football game. Now, that's changed a little bit in recent years with them. I'm like, what are they playing? Chicago? Ah, I can eat.
Come here. Yeah.
But, you know, but no, the draft, not really. I mean, I just sit down usually. Because I'm working, I just try to get organized. I usually go out and just try to enjoy the day because I know I'm going to be working all night and all, you know, and then Friday you kind of work all day because you have the reaction to day one and you have the day two stuff coming up. And then, look, I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the biggest draft pick in the world. Man, by like round 6, I am just screaming at the television when they're like, we're going to go to the zoo to have, you know, Monty the Monkey make the pick. They're like, oh, my God. Turn the damn card in. I don't care anymore. Like, the only time I care at that point is when Kansas City's on the clock. And everybody else is like, look, man, 99% of these guys are going to be completely – non important by like July.
That's why last year's live stream just turned into people giving us money for the Therese Paylor Foundation for covered shotgun seltzers. That's what it was. And day three was just pure chaos. We get done with that and turn around and go, here are the 10 picks that just occurred. You barely care about. You know, that it's
great. Like, the draft has become such an event. So, like, how old are you?
I am about to be 41.
Okay, so you got me. I'm 35. So you got me like years. But, like, look, I remember when I first started, like, really caring about the NFL. I was, like, 5 and 6. And I started watching the draft, like, the mid-90s. Yeah. And, like, the draft was just this thing on, like, Saturday morning. And you knew it, like, mattered. You knew it was important, but it wasn't important enough that, like, anybody really, like I always stumbled into the draft as a kid. I'd be flipping the channel and be like, hey, Dad, draft's on. Oh, hey, all right, cool. I'd sit down and see where the Chiefs are on the clock. And, you know, they have, like, Mel Kiper and Chris Berman. And then you'd turn on SportsCenter the next day, and they'd be like, here are the 6 notable picks after the first round. And that was it.
That was
and it. Now some guy gets taken at pick 243 overall by Minnesota, and you got some guy on Twitter like, I'll tell you what, this guy's my guy. Here's my 27 clips. And you're like, bro, you got to go outside and take a walk. Like, the Vikings aren't that excited they took this guy. Like, what are we doing here? The Vikings are like, who the hell's on the top of the board? It's Bob. Take Bob.
It's we had heard something a few years ago that there was one organization that was essentially just done. This is not the Chiefs. That was essentially just done. They had a ton of picks at the end of day three. They were just like, who do we target in UDFAs? You know what? Just screw it. We're going to start taking them at the end of round six. And so they're just essentially throwing darts at a dartboard, and whatever they're hitting, not literally throwing darts, but, you know, just being like, sure, that guy, why not? He's not going to make the roster anyway, but we're pretty set with our roster. So these are camp bodies anyway. So let's just take them. So, I mean, when you think about those picks and the hype around them and everything like that, even some NFL GMs are like, yeah, no, that guy's never making the roster, but you know, we'll take him because we don't want to fight with another team for a UDFA.
In the early 90s, before the draft went to seven rounds, it was like 20 rounds.
Oh, man.
Jerry Jones, like, this has been well written. I'm not breaking this one, but Jerry Jones used to just be like, just take local guys because they only don't have to, like, fly them in and stuff. they would just be like, hey, anybody good down at UTEP? Bring him in. Like, they, I mean,
to be fair, not a bad strategy.
They hit on a few of these guys. Yeah. But like, back then, they were just like, look, man, it's round 17. I don't care. Take whoever we can get in here on a bus trip.
Wasn't SMU good last year? What's he still doing here? Let's see if he's got some juice. You know, yeah, exactly.
Bring him in. Is he still breathing? If he's breathing, just draft him. He can be retired for all we care. You know, like, now, of course, it's like, if a team ever did something like that, my guy'd be a national story.
Oh, yeah.
Back then, it was like, get out the hell.
Yeah. You know,
it's fine. Who's got a Street and Smith laying around? Like, who's on page 70? You know, pick a name you like. Yeah.
All right. Zach asks, what insiders does Matt give the most credibility to? Who are your guys when you see something reported that you're just like, that's absolutely the case? Even if maybe you're hearing something different, if you're like, man, if I hear from that, it's gold.
So nationally, I mean, look, the transactional stuff is Schefter and Rapport.
Yeah.
You know, we know that. But beyond them, like, I'll try to give love to this. I mean, like, Albert Breer, who I work with at SI, I have never been around a more professional human being in my life. I was with him at the Combine. It is staggering the amount of people that he knows. Like, just people walking by him who, like, I have no idea who that person is. And I'm like, hey, man, what's going on? You're like, who the hell's that? Oh, the assistant D-line coach for Clemson. Like, gee, really? Okay.
You know that.
You know, and it's like the amount of work that goes into it is nuts. Like, I can't even imagine what it's like to be on Albert's level, but Albert certainly does a great job with the Chiefs. I mean, look, I'm not saying it because he's on this network. Nate Taylor, to me, is the best Chiefs insider that there is. You know, I mean, he does great work. But then, you know, there are other people on beats that I think get underappreciated. You know, Jordan Rodriguez of The Athletic. She's incredible.
She is.
Yeah. You know, Jory Epstein over at Yahoo does it. And Charles Robinson, by the way, who is one of the more underappreciated guys. Like, Charles does amazing work over there. I think... You know, some of those people that, like, Schefter and Rapport, God bless them. They get the transactions, and they're amazing at that. But there are people that do, like, Seth Wickersham at ESPN, who isn't, like, a traditional insider, but, like, gets inside information and does long-form work with it. People like that I have immense respect for, who just, they work so hard to bring those nuggets to light. I think a guy like Jeremy Fowler at ESPN does great work and is really plugged in. Those are some of the people that I look at and say, you know, Jake Glazer's he's been around forever. Yeah, he certainly qualifies. The people like that, they look at and go, man, the amount of work that goes into it to be that good at that. Like, if I break any news on something, I'm like, man, I'm thrilled to death. And I know how much work went into that little nugget. And then you're like, some guys like 20 of those in a week. Yeah. You're like, what? How the hell do you sleep?
Great.
Kids, how are you doing this? It's incredible.
Yeah. No, that's good. That's good. I saw that one pop up and I went, oh, that's a good one. I can't wait to ask that. All right. Neil says, what movie do you find yourself quoting the most?
Oh, my God. It depends what mood I'm in. Probably like Wedding Crashers.
Yeah. Or
for the longest time, like Night at the Roxbury, because that movie's so stupid, it's funny. I'm pretty sure my senior year book quote was something from Night at the Roxbury. Listen, I'll date myself. American Pie is one of my all-time favorite movies, and I will stand by that movie forever. So I'd say I'm not a huge movie guy. I just don't have the time. And then if I'm like, man, I got 3 hours, I'm probably gonna watch football.
Yeah.
where do you find yourself on that? You had a movie you quote all the time?
Airplane. Okay. And I realize that's awesome. Very fitting. I work in the aviation industry and all of that. But even before that, pick the wrong week to quit sniffing glue all the time. Like constantly. And yeah. I mean,
great movie.
Yeah, it is. Barbara Billingsley talking jive in the airplane is one of the funniest scenes in any movie ever. So, you know, my absolute favorite one to quote, because I'm a clumsy individual. You know, that's when my drinking problem started, and it's just, you know, Ted Stryker picking up the glass and then pouring it into his cheek. That's his drinking problem. They can't drink a glass of water. Just absolutely hilarious. So, yeah, I quote that one a lot.
The other two, you were sitting there talking, I was thinking about, like, Uncle Buck and Tommy Boy.
Oh, man. Tommy Boy, I quote a lot, too. Yeah.
Those are two of my favorite movies of all time. And there's a line in Uncle Buck where he's got this, like, people haven't seen it, this ridiculous winter hat on. And he's like, this hat, it angers a lot of people, just the sight of it. And if I can weave that into any conversation in the course of a winter, I'm involved. And like, some people get the joke, and then some people are like, what?
What?
And if those people don't get the joke, then I can't hang out with them anymore. But yeah. Those movies are like all-time classics for me. I
love them. Love them. All right, we're going to close with this one. This is Tony Chestnut says, who is going to play backup quarterback for the Chiefs this year? And he posits Zach Wilson as a question mark.
You know what, man? We laugh. But like, that is kind of a Brett Veach thing.
It is kind of a
Brett Veach. Isn't it like, hey, we'll give you a 7th-round pick for Zach Wilson, and we'll have Andy coach him, and then we're going to trot him out there in Week 18 against Denver and have him throw for like – and where's this going air raid for 4 quarters so Zach can throw for like 390 yards and 4 touchdowns, and we can trade him for a 2nd? That's actually like not a bad – pick. Like, I think it's probably a veteran guy because they've never gone with a young guy behind
right.
It's always been, you know, the Moores and the Hennies and the Gabberts. Listen, it could just be Blaine Gabbert again. Like,
yeah.
I mean, if I had to pick, I would say it's Blaine Gabbert. But Zach Wilson's fascinating. Like, Zach Wilson would actually be, and wouldn't that be the most Jets thing in the world? Like, he goes to the Chiefs, and the Chiefs somehow get like one game out of him where he looks like God, and then they can just be like, hey, we'll flip him for a Kevin Cobb style pick.
Right.
You know, like, so I'll say Gabbert. I'll say Gabbert.
I think it's probably Gabbert again, just because, again, I don't know when the transition's going to happen where they start trying to load up on a young guy that Pat likes to hang out with. Essentially, that's what that QB room's going to turn into. But as it stands right now, they still like having a vet that can maybe calm him down a little bit, just kind of sit next to him, be like, man, I've seen this before. You're good. You know, it'd just be that kind of calming presence over there. Eventually, Patrick's going to be able to do that for himself if he's not already able to do that, you know, to a certain point. And then they're going to start taking some gambles on that. But they've carried 3 quarterbacks. Like, it's not out of the realm of possibility they take another stab at it. I know that Chris Oludokun is still around and on the roster.
Yep.
Some sense. Keep him around, I guess. But, you know, to your point, if there's somebody out there like a Zach Wilson that they're just like, we're done with this kid. We're just done with him.
Yeah.
Andy, you know, Andy would be absolutely all over trying to get another talent like that and just being like, all right, cool. I love working with guys like this. I love working with this kind of talent. I've already gotten – Patrick has taken the ball that I gave him and ran even further than I could have even imagined him to run with it.
Right.
So let's try and groom this other individual and then hopefully flip some picks.
If you're the Jets and the Chiefs call you and they're like, "We'll take Zach Wilson," are you terrified? Like, do you even make the trade? Are you like, no? There's no way in hell. Like, we're sending them to Arizona.
I mean, for what it's worth, I don't think the people that Brett Veach and Andy Reid would be talking to are the people making the decision in the New York Jets organization right now. So, I mean, the person that's making that would happily see Zach Wilson out of that QB room. So
I'll give you one guy, and like I'm not saying I have any inside info. I have sure. No clue, but it's just something I've thought of. If you're the Chiefs and you're sitting there like round, let's say it's like the fifth round, would you take Joe Milton out of Tennessee?
Man,
dude, that kid's arm—it's
unreal. It is unreal.
I mean, is he worth in the fifth round being like, "Hey, man, I'm just going to take a stab, put him on the roster, and let Pat, who also has an arm like that, teach this kid how to harness it?" Because he's never going to start off Mahomes, obviously, but if you get him in there, he's the quintessential, like, hey, listen, Joe, week 18, we got Pittsburgh in a meaningless game, and we're thinking we're just going to air this bad boy out for about 55 attempts. Let her rip. Like,
Justin Watson on go routes all game long. Here it comes. Yeah.
You know, McColl, just keep running.
Just keep running.
Yeah, just please. Keep running. I just wonder, like, he's the kind of a prospect with them. I don't think there's any point in taking that, like, typical fifth, sixth round guy who you're like, he has no real upside.
Right.
If you're the Chiefs, you have no hole. You have probably the fewest holes of any team in the NFL. Like, why not? If that kid's there in the middle or latter portion of day three, say, look, I'm willing to take a chance, because if the kid ends up panning out, he might be our ticket to a high pick, and it costs us nothing, you know, because you're not going to sit there and keep him forever. Like, why not? I watched Milton play at Tennessee, and I don't think he's worth a top, you know, first three rounds type pick because he's just so unrefined. But man, a lot, he can throw the piss out of the football. It's crazy watching him.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for 21 questions. I really thank Matt Verderone for joining us. Again, check out his show, That Football Show. It's going to be him and Tucker D. Franklin talking every single week, not just about the Chiefs, but about the NFL in general. It's going to be a really good show, really good addition to our lineup. So I really thank him for being on. I'm Craig Stout for Matt Verderone. Be kind to each other. We will catch you later.